Well, welcome to this September 2018's Ask Your Herb Doctor. I should say straight off the bat here, after the engineer had mentioned the fact that we are not a government-supported radio station, KMUD Garberville 91.1 FM, thank goodness we're not government-supported. So we're very much a free speech, free enterprise, and funded by you guys, the public. If you like the show, then I would definitely encourage you to visit the website, www.kmud.org, and hit the red Donate Now button.
And we do actually get a tiny bit of money from CPB, a little over $100,000, but they're constantly threatening to take that away, and that ain't enough. So they do actually restrict a little of what we can say, but we got freedom like no place like else, and God bless it.
Yeah, well, amen. And that's the whole reason that we do this radio show and so many other people are out of KMUD's range of artists do their independent shows, bringing you independent news, giving you all sides, you know, both perspectives and not just a steered perspective that you might typically get from any particular radio stations that have their own agendas. So people, please do go ahead and donate. I want to say please donate as much as you can. Don't just be stingy. Appreciate that keeping something alive takes more input than just talking about things, but actually putting some money up there really will help the radio station stay on the air. I've been doing this show for 15 years now, and I've seen the pledge drives come and go, and they always do manage to reach the targets. I think at this point in time, though, we are about 15,000 short of the target, folks, so 65 is the number right now, and 80 is the hope for. So if you can, go ahead, please, and donate as much as you can, and let's just keep moving forward into this 2019. So I wanted to carry on from last month's discussion on critical thinking and cover-up. Like I said, we're an independent program, independent radio station, and lots of times you'll listen to people in different articles exposing different things, and for the large part you've probably never heard of it before, and so it's very important to have free speech, and that's certainly constitutionally one of the bedrocks of the American Declaration of Independence and the Constitution enshrining First and Second Amendment rights, etc., to keep everybody free and to enable people to be heard, whether or not they sound like they're crazy or they have crazy ideas or what they're saying sounds so far out there that you could hardly believe it. But that's the truth of it. Truth is stranger than fiction sometimes. So last month we discussed the beginning of critical thinking and how different trials that are done, and we're talking about medicine here at this point, but it does run into several other subjects, but medicine's the subject that we speak on for our radio show, and lots of clinical trials and lots of searchable publications found on the internet. Anyone can go to PubMed, for example. There's the National Library databases and many other portals that will have clinical trials, and the very fact that some of these clinical trials are done by people that have an agenda. So whether or not we want to believe that the drug companies have their own vested interests first and foremost, and that less than stellar results are covered up, I think it's undeniable. I think it's just a fact of life that there is something to be sold, and sometimes the cost is not too high. So when drugs come out and then they're pulled after a couple of years after causing heart attacks or raised blood pressure or other serious events, that does happen, and we have plenty of evidence behind that. But in the meantime, billions and billions of dollars have been made, and the punitive damages in lawsuits doesn't really count for much against the billions that are made in profit. So whilst the internet is an excellent source of information, you have to be very measured in your forming opinions about things. And for every good article, you're going to find some bad articles. And so it does take a modicum of science and definite intelligent pursuit in that subject to be able to filter it out sometimes, because sometimes they're so well written that it's difficult to discern the truth from the fabrications. Well, once again, we're going to be joined by Dr. Raymond Pete and have his wealth of experience on the matter. And I think without further ado, Dr. Pete, are you with us?
Yes.
Well, thanks so much for joining us again. As always, if you would just give an outline of your academic professional background so that people can understand where you come from.
I was a linguistics teacher for a while before I decided to get a PhD in biology in 1968, enrolled at University of Oregon in the biology department, and worked there for 4 years on reproductive physiology, largely. Right after that, then I went back to my interest in linguistics, philosophy, and consciousness, how the brain knows the world, and worked on a book on brain physiology. The book title was I can't remember it right now.
Okay, well, I'm sure you will in a moment. But...
Anyway, it was about brain physiology and reviewing a lot of Russian research. After I finished with that, then I got involved in doing nutrition counseling. So there has been a lot of interest in neurological, psychological effects of hormones and nutrition.
Yeah. Okay. I think in that the very pertinent application on a one-to-one basis in terms of counseling people and seeing people where they are when they first visit you and then taking advice and recommendations and suggestions of how better to change your lifestyle, probably nothing more evidence-based than that. And that leads me on to the evidence-based medicine. I know that is a phrase that's been around now for some time, and I think is touted as a secure, rationale for what it is they're trying to tell you or sell you. But as we've mentioned before, in medicine and in trials, I know it sounds very glib, but I think it's just the way it is. You know, big corporate interests have a lot to lose in getting things out of their control, and steering medicine is extremely important in terms of the ideology behind it. So for evidence-based medicine, it depends entirely on a reliable base of evidence, and this is the studies that are done. And if the evidence base is tampered with and or paid for, then evidence-based medicine as a science is pretty useless. We have things like financial conflicts of interests, and then actually selling the science as a marketing initiative in terms of the outreach, in terms of meeting and capturing an audience. And then the ideology behind it. I know that you've talked many times about the ideology and the ideological drive behind things, whether it's politics or whether indeed it is science and medicine's, it's the revelation of medicine. And I know you've mentioned in the past here, and I know you don't really have too much stock in it because you've provided other evidence to support the contrary thinking, but receptor-based medicine, and then there's the whole cancer, targeted gene cancer approach. What do you think about evidence-based medicine in terms of what you've found in the many, or at least four decades that you've been looking at what you've been told or what we've been told and what you've certainly found out is contrary to it and why that's happened?
A few hundred years ago, when there was an established religion, it determined what people could believe philosophically, and as science, physics, and biology took over from the established religion, they became the established religion in its place. And they tell the public, the people in the universities and the established research institutions under the control often of the government, they tell the public what they should believe, exactly the way the medieval church used to absolutely require conforming belief. They don't burn you now for descending from science, but it's almost...
Metaphorically, they might.
they kick you out of universities and any good social position if you really descend. The authoritarian aspect of medicine peaked when this idea of evidence-based medicine based on these big multi-million dollar multi-year studies became at least a nominal standard. Most of what doctors do has nothing to do with that, but it's a way of enforcing certain practices and kicking out of medicine the doctors who don't want to conform to those big practices. It has to be either the giant industry or the government working with those industries to fund these huge multi-institutional, multi-year research projects. And many of these major studies, for example, in AIDS drugs, the corruption has been documented. Some of the institutions participating simply put in phony information to support the sale of the drugs they wanted to sell.
And this is the collusion, and this is between such things as the government and their ability to silence opposition and the corporations that have the financial wherewithal to pull this off.
In many ways, the institutions have controlled the governments and the universities, and that there's a long tradition of that. At one time, the land grant colleges were a way of letting science help the farmers, and the county extension agents and Department of Agriculture and such, for a time, actually put out useful information to the public, but they were soon taken over by the industries. And now, for example, over at Oregon State University, which was land-grant university, the insecticide and herbicide companies and the radiation industry really set the tone for what they're doing over there.
Okay. I wanted to just bring up again, I've mentioned this several times in several previous shows, that the Hippocratic Oath is something that doctors all take on graduation and swear to defend, and the first do no harm rule. I wanted to talk about several specific drugs, and classes of drugs, and just to bring it to the listener's attention that these things are no longer buried, no longer hidden. They are public knowledge. They've become public knowledge in the last 10 years, 15 years, maybe 20. But yet they're still very much part of the medical dispensary, and millions of people are still using these. And again, I think this, the mind is a very, very difficult thing to re-educate, actually, with a lot of people. I think we go through school, most of us go through school and or college and university, and we study different subjects, and I want to say this, I sound too much like a fatalist, but we're force-fed information, or the information that we are taught and we are reading is steered by certain interests, and this is what we come to understand as the way it is. And it was very much the same with me when I was studying herbal medicine in the degree that I did there in England. all of the microbiology was standard medical microbiology, the pathology again, standard pathology, tissue pathology, and medicine per se was standard medicine, and the drugs that we were taught about and the class of mode of action, et cetera, was all based on standard medical science. And so getting good information and finding the truth out about certain things takes a bit of work, and it's actually a level of undoing the brainwashing, because when I first got speaking to you almost 10 years ago, some of the things that you were saying at the time shocked me. I couldn't actually believe I was hearing it, and it sounded so extraordinary that I had to listen to it because it was so extraordinary, but I was a little skeptical to begin with because it sounded so different. And I think that's the very thing that people have to understand. They have to unlearn what it is that they've been processed with in terms of schooling and education because of the way that it's driven. And so looking at drugs in particular, I just wanted to cover a few of those drugs with you. And I know you've got a wealth of experience behind understanding both the drug's mode of action, and you have a very different opinion about the cause, if you like, of the disease for which that drug may be prescribed, and actually have a good understanding of the drug's action itself, and a very good way of refuting its existence, you know, or its prescription. And so I guess let's just start by saying KMUD Garberville 91.1 FM from 7:30 until the end of the show at 8 o'clock. People are invited to call in with questions, either related or unrelated to this month's second part commentary on cover-up and collusion and critical thinking. And Dr. Raymond Pete is our guest. And from 7:30 until the end of the show, people are invited to call in with questions either related or unrelated to the show's topic. And the number here, if you're in the area, 707-923-3911. And just to remind people that we are in the last hour of the pledge drive that's been running, and we need more money. And so please donate. Go to the website, www.kmud.org, and hit the donate button. And please donate as much as you can. I know we're about 15,000 short of the target at the moment. So let's just close that gap. And then engineer, Mike, I think you wanted to... Did you want to say something, or were you just...
Oh, well, we have a thank you, but it's an anonymous thank you. I was just waving the money to show you so you'd get a little lilt in your voice. Yay, okay. Thank you, anonymous people. We love you.
He's got some greenbacks.
Well, I know who it is.
Oh, okay.
We love you even more because I know who you are.
Okay, so 707-923-3911 to phone in for pledging and also for people who want to ask questions. And we do get people from all over. We've had people out of the States regularly. So people, go ahead, please, and do donate whatever you can. If we can make this collection around the world, I'm sure we can get this 15,000 done. So Dr. Pete, I wanted just to open up the repeated example of SSRIs and these commonly prescribed antidepressants, and the fact that they increase quite clearly in terms of their side effects and their label warnings, the risk of suicide, violence and homicide at all ages. And that in 2007, the FDA admitted that SSRIs can cause madness at all ages and that the drugs are very dangerous, otherwise daily monitoring wouldn't be needed for them. Now, I looked earlier on and I was drawn to an article, actually it was written in 1960, and it was a study done on cypraheptadine and how beneficial cypraheptadine was. And it's actually an anti-serotonin agent. So I find it so strange that here we are in 2018 and have been for the last decade at least, been prescribed SSRIs, which are the very drugs that would block the uptake of serotonin, making it more available, when actually cypraheptadine is an anti-serotonin agent. And the 1960s article, which was so positively in favor of blocking serotonin, how it gave the positive benefits of it, how the SSRIs could even stand against that. I don't... What's your view of SSRIs and how they are working and why on earth they are prescribed?
They talk about different generations of the antidepressants, and the first generation was the amino oxidase inhibitors, increased your adrenaline along with the dopamine and serotonin. And that first generation, the patents expired, and they wanted to sell new products. They had to find reasons for getting people to stop those which often worked very well and to move on to a new product. And after the first two generations' patents had expired, they had to come up with something really new, and the there were various reasons for switching serotonin from a problem. For example, the carcinoid tumor that produces lots of serotonin, usually in the intestine, sometimes in the lungs, that produced insanity, depression, mania, and lots of mental symptoms that in the 50s people knew, as soon as they knew about serotonin, they knew it was a dangerous substance. But when following the MAO, monoamino oxidase inhibitors, which worked, they needed to come up with something to build on that. And they said, well, it must have been the serotonin increase produced by the first generation. And so we've got a new way to increase the serotonin. And actually, a study of one of these SSRIs, so-called, that they were going to try to treat vicious dogs by increasing their serotonin, supposedly, which was the serenity and peacefulness and bliss transmitter. But they found that the aggressive, vicious dogs actually had high serotonin, and when they gave it the SSRI, its serotonin went down as it became a pleasant dog. And so something which has been sold to millions of people to increase their serotonin, it actually sometimes does have good effects, but they're most likely by lowering serotonin.
Because it was touted originally as a treatment for depression, but you mentioned serotonin a lot of times as an inflammatory molecule, and you always advocate blocking exposure to it.
Yeah, it's known to cause blood clotting, spasms of coronary arteries, other arteries, inflammation. The latest horrible thing is that it's a major factor in osteoporosis. Just the excess serotonin produced by an inflamed intestine creates osteoporosis, but that's one of the side effects of drugs that increase it.
Again, when I was looking at material with which to substantiate the claims here, as it were, against these well-loved drugs, a 1975 article, it was actually a Polish journal of pharmacological pharmacy, had an article here that read, anti-serotonin agents, parentheses, cyproheptadine, in the treatment of migraine connects the gut to the formation of migraine in this article. And you've long mentioned serotonin in the gut as an inflammatory mediator, and that the gut related to migraines and headache and spasm is well established, but that I think these days most people don't even really associate their gut and their bowel movement with their headache or with their, you know, mental processes.
That's been a major project of the medical industry in the 19th century and earlier. The intestine was a central part of medical understanding of the body, right at the core of how the body works. But then with the beginning of organized so-called scientific medicine, there was a campaign to wean doctors away from the use of laxatives and enemas.
Right.
claiming that...
Seen as too primitive, huh?
Yeah, and they taught doctors that they were dangerous, addictive, all kinds of ways to incriminate and just move doctors into more mechanical treatments.
Yeah.
But in fact, if you start up in the middle 19th century to the more recent endotoxin studies starting 20 or 30 years ago, you see that they were on the right track in the 19th century, and that now it's turning out that endotoxin, serotonin, histamine are major things in everything that goes wrong in the organism.
It's interesting you mentioned that about cascara. And I just wanted to mention that to substantiate that. Cascara and cassia, both the anthraquinone containing herbs that are laxative, have laxative properties, improve bowel movement, relieve constipation, and by doing so, benefit the person using it, because endotoxin formation from constipation has such negative sequelae that there's almost a campaign against manufacturers that produce these products, because they've gotten such a bad press, and they are cast in such a bad light.
Well, that's actually an FDA conspiracy.
Right. Well, that's the very people. You've hit the nail on the head. I won't go any further than that, but that was very much two of the plants that were in question.
They've gone through a series of natural substances, killing the general access to them as far as possible, and assigning all rights to one company, which then increases the price a hundredfold, basically making it impossible to use the cheap natural herbal form.
Yeah. It's not conspiracy at all. It's actually the truth, folks. But like I said, truth is always stranger than fiction. Let me put you on pause there for a minute, Dr. Pete, because we have two people here lined up here to ask questions. So let's take this first caller. Call away from, and what's your question?
I'm from New York State.
Okay,
and
welcome.
My question, it's actually a follow-up question from a previous show. I had a skin rash, and a couple of things Dr. Pete mentioned was, one, the dry CO2, but the salt baths, too, which I've been doing. It's gotten a lot better. But there's two things I added that I just wanted to get your commentary on. One, probiotics. I've been doing the kale and the carrots, and I just don't know that that does enough to build the right bacteria, given that theoretically, even if no bacteria is ideal, I don't think it's practical. And I think from reading in one of your papers, Metchnikoff, he said inflammation is an exaggeration of the aging process, or maybe those are your words, and that he consumed fermented food and believed that proper bacteria was the key to longevity. So in light of that, I mean, I think the probiotics actually has been helpful to me. I took about 15 strains. And maybe there hasn't been enough science done on it, but it seems to me that it's a positive. So that's one. And the second thing I added was thymus gland and adrenal gland and hypothalamus, desiccated, low heat, grass-fed animals. And I think that's helped too, because I think you mentioned the first thing that happens if you have a cortisol spike on a regular basis is, you know, your thymus gland goes first, then your muscles go. And if you're older, over 50, it, you know, that to me seems like you never know whether your thymus gland's gone, but I figured why not take that. So those, I've added those two things. The other thing topically, the third one, is vitamin E from a capsule and COQ10 squeezed out of a capsule onto the skin area, sort of around it. I don't really think those are good ideas, or whether you'd have anything else to try to clear the thing up completely.
Okay, well, let's get round to those three questions. Thanks for your asking the questions. So, Dr. Pete, probiotics first. Let's get your take on probiotics and then move through the glandulars and the vitamin E, CoQ10. And we do have three more callers queued up here, so let's get started with this.
Yeah, getting the ideal intestinal flora would be extremely important. It's very hard to do, though, and so it takes a lot of trial and error. Yogurt works for lots of people, but sometimes it takes other bacteria. My experience is that the antibiotic substances produced by Bacillus subtilis mm-hmm. and the Kynephormus, Lichenophormus, I guess. But anyway, the bacteria that produce antibiotic substances are very helpful. And the bacteriophage, a virus that kills specific bacteria, including some of them kill E. coli and some of the others that can be toxic. So,
and these bacteriophages are available? Are they?
A few of them are available in Life Extension Foundation, for example, but there are other companies making a bigger variety of them now available, but most of the work for the last 70 years has been in Eastern Europe, and it's just now catching on in the U.S.
Okay, and then what about glandulars?
They are at least good nutrition, and some of them do have some active agents, like adrenal cortex contains a fair amount of pregnenolone.
Oh, there you go. Okay, I know you're a good supporter of pregnenolone. And then I know you do support vitamin E use, and what do you have to say about vitamin E and CoQ10 as a cutaneous treatment?
Very good. They're poorly absorbed, but if you do absorb, it's very helpful.
Okay. All right, well, there's that one. Let's take the next caller. Caller, where are you from, and what's your question?
I got a comment and a question. You were saying something about migraine headaches and pertaining to the gut.
Yeah.
So what was your, was there a suggestion there to keep the bowels, like enemas and that sort of thing, would help with migraine headaches?
Yeah, definitely. The whole endotoxin issue surrounding poor gut motility is responsible for inflammation, and that inflammation is picked up in the intestine and actually causes a like a reflex action for migraine, triggering migraines in terms of vasoconstriction. Dr. Pete, let me just clarify your understanding of migraines in relation to serotonin and endotoxin.
When your blood sugar is low, your intestine is very touchy and has exaggerated reflexes, so that stretching it or bulging it with gas or with constipation or chemical inflammation from the endotoxin and other chemicals produced by the bacteria, any of those irritations is exaggerated when your blood sugar is low. And a good diet, making sure your thyroid function is good to stabilize your blood sugar, can greatly reduce the incidence of migraines because your intestine loses that hypersensitivity when your blood sugar is good.
Okay, and then Carla, did you have a question specifically for?
I have a comment regarding you guys were saying we're talking about psychotropic drugs or antidepressants and violence. And my comment to you is, I was at a radio program about 2 or 3 years ago. They listed 75 people that did mass murders, and they listed the drugs that they were on, or had just come off of, or had just started. There's the psychotropic drugs, antidepressants, and mass shootings, whether it be a knives, bludgeoned, or whatever. They named all the people and the drugs that they are on. Mm-hmm. And the Alphabet Channel, news channels, briefly said something about it, but then probably pushed it under the carpet, mainly because of the pharmaceutical companies probably put pressure on people not to, I'm guessing, I don't even know, but there is obviously a correlation with antidepressants and violence, is what you guys are saying.
Well, yeah,
correct?
That's like I mentioned, the FDA actually making a statement about this, a public statement in 2007.
That's interesting that they said it, and it's not that my point is they're blaming the gun, but it's not the gun, it's the person
behind
the gun.
Exactly.
Okay,
exactly.
Thank you.
Okay, you're welcome. Okay, so we do have one more caller on the air. Hang on a second. I just wanted to say that we're on the air live, and this is Ask Your Herb Doctor. So if you want to call KMUD Garberville, our number here is 707-923-3911, and Dr. Pete is our long-term guest. And so either questions surrounding or, even unrelated to this month's show, go ahead and call, and please do donate. It's a very independent radio station. There really aren't too many like this, especially across the States. In the days when I was a teenager, there was a radio station called Radio Caroline, and they were in the English Channel, and they were a very independent radio station. They were just floating out there on their boat, and they had a big transmitter. And these kind of people, you know what? You've got to give them space, and free speech is very important. You know, let's not quash it. Let's keep it alive, because there's always more than one side to an argument, and sometimes hearing that other side might just save your life. So that's the reason for having Dr. Pete on the show and running the monthly shows that we do. So please visit the website, kmud.org, and donate some money now. We're still about 15,000 short, and the show is closes at 8 o'clock, and that's when the pledge drive closes. So please do donate some money, keep us going. So Dr. Pete, we do have another caller on the line, so let me just get the engineer back.
Hello?
Hi, you there? Good.
Yes.
Where are you from, caller, and what's your question?
I'm from London, Ontario, Canada.
Okay, what's your question?
And I've been a listener for a little while, and I've heard you to talk about various government agencies, such as the CIA, FBI, and some other ones. And I've also seen some interesting threads on the Ray Pete Forum. And I was wondering who you feel are what group is at the top of the pyramid of world power?
Interesting. Well, Dr. Pete, do you want to say anything to that? Do you have any kind of opinion who might be on top, or is it just a generalized mania for control?
Generally, people with poor judgment and bad information are in control.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Let's leave it at that. And in terms of not wanting to name names, but I think the whole thing is such an embroiled soup of just deceit and dishonesty and poor judgment, like you say. And it's unfortunate. It's a mixture of greed and money and power. And it's always been sold that it's going to be the problem that we live with. And so, there's no surprise. It's ever since Adam and Eve. Okay, well, the bells ringing and the lights flashing. So,
all right. Thanks.
Okay, no, you're welcome. Thanks for calling in. Okay, so we have another caller. Caller, you're on the air. Where are you from? What's your question? Okay, that caller's out there somewhere in the... engineer, can
okay,
you...
please call back.
Yeah, go ahead and call back. Okay, so just to wrap up the whole SSRI thing, which had a lot of press and massive amounts of sales and lots of people being prescribed it, the very fact that serotonin is an inflammatory molecule involved with dysbiosis and poor bowel function, etc., responsible for things like migraine headaches, amongst many other things, the fact that they produce an SSRI is kind of madness right there. So all you have to do is look at serotonin, look at the negative effects of serotonin, and get over the fact that they're painting it in this blissful, peaceful hormone-type light, because that's not the way serotonin is. But that's just misinformation again, you see. So you have to be very careful where you get your information from and see who's selling it, because you sometimes find there's a very biased approach that they're taking. Okay, so moving on from SSRIs, let's just talk about some other compounds which I think we're all force-fed and advertised and are big money makers, but unfortunately they're around for a long time before they become discontinued or withdrawn from the market because of their side effects. I think some of these things that I think about are going to be... I know we've mentioned the estrogens, and the xenoestrogens that are in the environment that have been linked to cancers and other inflammatory degenerative processes. But what would you quickly say, because I know we've got other things to cover here, what would you quickly say about estrogens?
That they synergize with radiation and stress, that estrogen is sort of an ultimate... stress-related hormone like histamine and serotonin, and they have their place in tissue renewal, but that place should be limited to a few hours following any trauma or tissue injury.
Right. And you've always said that really estrogen's main function, I think, is from an inflammatory point of view for implantation during...
And the same thing, when any tissue is injured, it helps to activate the cell renewal process. But if that continues, then the cell renewal turns into a tumor or...
Right, and there's lots of estrogen-dependent or estrogen-promoted tumours. I wanted just to quickly say, because we do have another couple of callers here, I looked at an advert, if you like, for a product called Del Estrogen. This was a prescribing information as of November 2017, and I was quite pleased and shocked to see that it said in pretty big, bold, capital letters, estrogens increase the risk of endometrial cancer. It wasn't just that. There was a big list of other issues associated with it, but yet they are advertising this product and quite blatantly telling you that it is actually a fairly big promoter of endometrial cancer.
And the publications in the medical journals over the years have claimed that estrogen is good for more than 200 different disease conditions, all of which were proved false.
Yeah, it's almost like... tell the biggest lie and you have the greatest chance of getting away from it, or rather be the most blatant. And people, I think, unfortunately, are just in a state at this point in time where they just don't really want to hear too much more because it's just too shocking. And so when they freely tell you that these things cause cancer or they cause, you know, heart attack or stroke or increased risk of death, I think, unfortunately, most people are not really... serious enough about being critically thinking about it. Well, anyway, let's get the next caller. Caller, you're on the air. Where are you from? And what's your question?
I'm from Long Island, and my question is the B vitamins. Most B vitamins, when you take them separately, they're not in the right ratio, and they're all synthetic. I was thinking that, like you mentioned brewer's yeast in the past, that nutritional yeast, which I think has less estrogen, has the B vitamins in sort of a natural ratio and relationship, plus selenium in bioavailable form, and being in the proper proportion, it would be, you know, may not be as large a dosage, but it seems like it would be a much better way to go for the body to absorb them and help with digestion and all other aspects when in the right form.
I would say this right off the bat. Dr. Pete does not, he really is not a very big advocate for vitamins per se, and he's much more based on his food. But if you have to take any kind of vitamins, Dr. Pete, knowing what you know about their manufacturing process, etc., what would you have to say about vitamins that we think might be okay for you, and or what do you have to say about nutritional yeast?
Nutritional yeast does have a good range of the B vitamins. The drawbacks, besides the small amount of estrogen, is the indigestible starch and the high phosphate content. So if you use it for a supplement, using it for several days is okay, but you don't want to use it as a major part of your diet because of that high phosphate content, unless you take measures to balance it with calcium.
And then what about good? Are there any good vitamins out there that actually are good?
I stopped using oral vitamins in the 1970s because I had some extreme allergic reactions to vitamin B2 and folic acid, which, being yellow-colored, they're absorbers of even visible light, causing chemical reactions to happen. And that means that before you get them into your mouth, they're likely to have been exposed to oxygen and radiation that has activated free radical processes, making them a pretty bad risk for allergy.
Okay, well, I think we have three people kind of cute.
Can I say one other question on vitamins? You mentioned magnesium carbonate and calcium carbonate, but if they're less bioavailable, wouldn't your body treat them as toxins too if they're not as bioavailable as glycine?
Yeah, in fact, the magnesium supplements very often cause migraines and asthma symptoms because of probably some contaminant in them. But in your stomach, the stomach acid generally will turn much of the supplement, such as magnesium carbonate, into magnesium chloride, which is instantly absorbed.
Gotcha.
Okay, thanks.
Last thing, are you blood type B?
What was that?
Is your blood type B?
I don't know my blood type.
All right, thanks for your question. Let's get this next call. A call away from, what's your question?
Hi, I'm from Northern California. I'm 77, and I'm a sustaining member of KMUD, and I love it, and I listen to it almost exclusively, and your show sounds great. I've had some high thyroid issues and been taking my own, whatever you call it, every day, twice a day, and it goes, between 170 and 144, and then it goes down to 113, and I was wondering what you think of what your approach is to high blood pressure. How do you feel about, for instance, lisinopril? Is that how you pronounce it?
Mm-hmm. That's how you pronounce it, but
I haven't taken it yet, but yeah. I've been, I have a bottle of it here, and I'm just wondering whether I should do it or not.
So, Dr. Pete, high blood pressure, and I know specifically the person's asking about lisinopril, but...
Big doses of vitamin K often cure it in just a week or two, but getting enough calcium in your diet, especially in relation to phosphate, calcium and vitamin D are extremely important. And then if you can't do it with good nutrition... Then, of all the medical approaches that I know of, the angiotensin blockers and the ACE inhibitors are the safest medical approaches that I know of.
And how much vitamin K, thank you, would you recommend?
I know people who lowered their chronically extremely high blood pressure over 200. Over 100, lowered their pressure within a week or two down to the normal range by taking 30 to 50 milligrams a day and then stopping.
30 to 50?
Yeah,
said?
Milligrams of vitamin K.
And that's a vitamin pill, you're saying?
Well, no, it's generally a liquid, but I know you can get a pill.
Oh, it's a liquid.
Well,
okay.
The liquid form is what I use, but there are obviously tableted versions of it. But Thorne Research does a good 1 milligram per drop. Actually, now I think there's actually 10 milligram per drop. But they do a liquid vitamin K2, which is a supplement that I would recommend most people go find.
And you take it on an empty stomach?
It doesn't really matter. It's only a drop or two drops or whatever. But even if you're taking more than that, 20 or 30 drops, it wouldn't be a problem regardless.
And can you eat vitamin K in something also?
Well, it's generated by your gut, but in your gut flora generally produce vitamin K. But
I see. And then you said calcium also and D?
Yeah, calcium and vitamin D. Yeah, they're both...
Oh, vitamin D.
Yeah, okay. They're intimately... related.
The D3?
Yeah.
And how much of that would you suggest?
Well, you want about 4,000 to 6,000, 8,000 IU. It's very, very different from person to person. If you get your blood drawn, and I think the reference range is above 30 nanograms per milliliter or nanograms per deciliter. Somewhere in the range of 50 is probably better. I think the upper limit is 70 or 75. And I find people that take 2,000 or 4,000 a day, sometimes they have very low vitamin D labs. And some people,
oh, really?
And some people that can take 8 or 10 or 12, they still have normal vitamin D. So it's quite important to get your vitamin D tested. It's not an expensive lab, but it'll give you a good idea of where it is. And then you can get retested in a month or 2 months and see where you are.
So take the K and the calcium and the D3. And I also take a thyroid medicine. I had my thyroid removed.
Okay.
So
the right kind of thyroid supplement often lowers the blood pressure. You want to keep your TSH fairly low, at the low end of the normal range, because TSH itself is responsible for increasing blood pressure.
Okay. Terrific. Thank you very much.
Yeah, you're welcome.
I'm looking at this medicine, and I'm just nervous about getting involved with sildenafil.
Try natural alternatives first and see how they work for you. That's my advice. But and then if you, hopefully you're supporting Kmud financially.
I am. I'm a sustaining member.
Excellent. I didn't really want to put you on the spot, and you didn't have to.
No. I believe in this station. It's great.
Awesome.
Yeah. Listen to it all the time. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you for your call. Okay, the lights are flashing. I know there's several people here. Oh, okay. He says, no, even though the lights were flashing, I don't know what happened there. Okay,
I think people are just giving money.
Okay, good. That's people calling in. Got it. Okay. So we've got 8 minutes to go. I wanted just to quickly, I know we're not going to get through what I had prepared here, and perhaps we can just carry on with it next month, but I like it when the calls come in thick and fast, and I know Dr. Pete feels the same way about it, but he's obviously very able to give plenty of information without really having to answer questions, but I know he kind of enjoys it. So I just wanted to mention a couple of things related to SSRIs and articles that are, 2018, so published this year. And this is things like bleeding induced by selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, a case report and review of literature. That's a 2018 article. Another one here in the British Journal of Clinical Pharmacology, gastrointestinal bleeding risk of SSRI by level of kidney function. So this is a paper with decreased kidney function, have a definite increased risk of bleeding. And anyway, there's hundreds and thousands of articles, so don't just accept what your doctor tells you as being something that's safe for you. Question it. It's your right. It's your right to question what it is you're being told, just like it's your right to question what I'm telling you. I don't expect you to go away and just believe everything I say. Go and find it out for yourself.
That reminds me, and just last week I've heard from two people that when their doctor prescribed a certain drug, immediately they started feeling terrible, felt like it was killing them. And I said, well, why don't you stop it? And they both have said, my appointment isn't for 2 or 3 weeks yet, and I can't stop it until the doctor takes me off it.
Oh, my gosh. So there you go. I mean, the doctor, unfortunately, is elevated to such a supernatural position. It's so bizarre. It's so bizarre. I don't know if there's anything else. I guess priests are probably the only other class of people that people would listen to without questioning so much. But anyway, all right, so the lights are flashing. I guess people are calling in. So hopefully people are calling in and they're donating. The number is 707-923-3911. And we need another probably, I don't know how many thousand. Let's say it was 15 when I came on. Hopefully it's less than that now. Please do donate. Visit the website, kmud.org. Push the red donate button and please donate some money. I also wanted to mention an article, Dr. Pete, that I looked at just amongst other articles supporting cyproheptadine back in the 60s. And the main reason for cyproheptadine was because it was an anti-serotonin agent. And yet, here we are in 2018, and you've constantly said in the past on radio shows that there's lots of material from the 30s, 40s, and 50s which has just gotten buried because the advent of modern quote-unquote medicine and the corporate interests that are driving it and steering the ideology behind it have buried it.
And one study found that a small dose of cyproheptadine was effective against lymphoma.
Yeah. Anyway, okay, I know it's 5:02. I don't think we're going to get time for any more callers, but I wanted to hopefully next month question you some more about some of these things that I think people unfortunately just take for granted as being things that we should take, things like the lipid-lowering drugs. I know we've mentioned statins in the past, and there's plenty of very respectable people campaigning against them. And then the ADD and ADHD drugs, which are basically the amphetamines, and then all the other cardiovascular drugs that people are taking. I mean, that last caller there who was being prescribed lisinopril. I'm not saying she shouldn't take it, but I'm saying that there's plenty that you can do that's alternative to it. So don't just jump into the first drugs you're prescribed. And then other things, Alzheimer's drugs. And I wanted to ask you some more about your belief in some of the other things that you've researched over these last 4 or 5 decades. Well, thanks so much for your time, Dr. Pete, and I'll point people to your website.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, so Dr. Pete can be reached www.raypete.com, and fully referenced articles, many different subjects, and like I said, fully referenced. And he's been spending a long time, probably 40 years here, doing what he's doing, and he's very, very purposeful, and he's very altruistic, and he's not doing it for money, folks. So please take a look at his work. And for all those people that are listening at this point in time and who have donated and have pledged, thank you. And for those people who are thinking about it, please get off the fence and push that button, however much it is you decide. That it's all going to add up towards enabling this radio station's survival and continuance into 2019. We're probably never going to stop raising money. That's just the nature of being independent. So don't be surprised. And sometimes you just have to be careful about the people that you do support. Maybe it's time for you to not support other things and start supporting KMUD in terms of what it is you hear from them. So until October of this year, I'll say goodnight, and we can be reached www.westernbotanicalmedicine.com during normal business hours. And thank you for listening until October. When the clocks roll back, I'll see you then. Enjoy the beautiful fall.